Hello and welcome to FASD Family Life, the show for families by families where we discuss parenting children and teens with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I am your host, Robbie Seal, FASD educator, advocate, and mom of four children with FASD. I know the struggle is real, but so is success. Hello, my friends, and welcome to the very first episode of FASD Family Life, the podcast for families by families where we get real about raising children and youth with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I'm Robbie Seal. I'm the mother of five, ranging from 29 to 13 years old. Four of my children are adopted and have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So as you can imagine, we have had many ups and downs as a family, and we understand how isolating it can be to be a parent of a child with FASD. I hope that sharing my experiences can help you feel that you are not alone and that there is hope for you and your child with FASD. I'd like to begin by clearly identifying what is FASD. The definition I like to use is from the Canadian FASD Research Network, which states that fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, is a diagnostic term used to describe impacts on the brain and body of individuals prenatally exposed to alcohol. FASD is a lifelong disability. Individuals with FASD will experience some degree of challenges in their daily living and will need support with things like motor skills, physical health, learning challenges, memory, attention, communication, emotional regulation, and social skills to reach their full potential. Each individual with FASD is unique and has areas of both strengths and challenges. And I can testify to that with my four kids. They're all different. They've all been impacted by FASD in some similar and some very different ways. FASD is a lifelong disability. So whether our loved one with FASD is an infant, toddler, teenager, or adult, they will require some support at every stage. Oftentimes, the toddler years are the golden years for children with FASD, and difficulties begin to become more and more apparent as the children get older and we begin to expect more of them. It's not hard to be three. You just show up and everyone is delighted to see you. But by the time a child is seven, well, they're expected to follow instructions, obey authority, sit still, keep their hands to themselves, and be quiet for extended periods of time. Seven-year-olds are expected to learn how to read, to print, to spell an increasing number of words correctly, to write simple sentences, maybe even write a science report. A seven-year-old is expected to know how to dress for the weather and to come inside when they get too cold. They're expected to remember to bring their backpacks and jackets to school and back home again. These expectations are typically out of reach for a child impacted by FASD. And because FASD cannot be easily identified, as there are seldom any physical indicators, the child is thought to be lazy, undisciplined, or bad. And since a disproportionate number of children with FASD do not live with their birth parents, the prenatal alcohol exposure may be unknown to the child's caregivers, whether that be another family member, an adoptive or foster parent. Many of my friends who have adopted children were unaware of their child's prenatal alcohol exposure until many years later, so they struggled with challenging behaviors, increased family stress, and school difficulties without understanding why. FASD has a high prevalence. Recent stats indicate that 1 in 20 in Canada and the U.S. are impacted by FASD. However, far too few people are aware of this invisible disability and its impact on individuals, so they might not consider that these challenging behaviors are symptoms of a disability. Oh, the school years are often difficult for families raising children with FASD. Children work so hard to perform well and blend in at school, and then they erupt into fits of frustration and anger at home. teachers seldom see these emotional outbursts that are so common in our homes, so it's difficult for them to connect our experience with our child with what they see at school. And then come the turbulent teenage years. Oh gosh, fasten your seatbelts, my dear friends. This is when our exhilarating and sometimes terrifying amusement park ride of parenting turns into a roller coaster that you swear is going to push you over the edge. We are smack in the middle of this epic ride with our youngest three children. Many, many days I have to remind myself that this too shall pass. It may pass like a kidney stone, but it will pass. We have to keep our focus on our goals for our kids and for our family and not let ourselves be swept away by the challenge of the present moment. So let's talk about some of the challenges. In Diane Melbin's book, Trying Differently Rather Than Harder, she writes, people with FASD have, by definition, differences in their brains. They have a disability. They may have no observable facial characteristics from prenatal alcohol exposure. Their only symptoms may be seen in the primary and secondary behaviors. Thinking about behaviors as symptoms of a physical disability expands options for developing effective parenting and professional techniques. End quote. Wow, my mind was blown the first time I read this. The more I thought about it and the more I learned about FASD, I have to tell you that this statement has become the foundation from which I approach my children's challenges. What if it's brain and not behavior is the question I often ask myself. When we can reframe a common struggle like stealing to a brain disability, which manifests in impulsivity, lack of understanding of ownership, inability to link cause and effect, poor working memory, we can step back from punishing a child for stealing and instead prevent the opportunity in the first place. Parents have come up with many creative prevention strategies. Things like identifying everything the child owns with a specific colored sticker, and then if the child comes to be in possession of something that does not bear that color sticker, the item can be returned to the rightful owner. Another approach might be limiting the opportunities for your child to steal by not taking them to the store with you, or having clothes that have no pockets, or backpacks that only have one or two pockets instead of 10 pockets. One trick I like to use is when I do have to bring my kids to the grocery store is to give them each a basket to carry so that they have something to focus on, like complaining how heavy the milk is or the fragility of the eggs or how it's just not fair because they have more in their basket than their siblings. But they're busy, they're helping mom, and we successfully avoid the temptation to take things that don't belong to them. In a classroom setting, parents can let the teacher know that their child, due to a brain injury, may impulsively take things of interest. And to reduce opportunity, the teacher might be asked to ensure all the valuables are locked away and that the child would be assigned a coat hook or a cubby for their belongings inside of the teacher and not behind a wall like in a cloakroom. Classrooms should be locked when the students are outside for recess to reduce opportunity. Parents can establish a practice of checking backpacks, lunch bags, pockets, and socks when their children return home. In my experience, if I asked my child where something came from, it was always the same two stories. And I'll bet your children have told you the same two stories too. The first was, my friend gave it to me. And when I asked the friend's name, they would say, I don't remember, but my friend gave it to me. And if it was money they found, I found it on the ground. Oh, we would go around and around, getting more and more frustrated and no closer to solving the mystery of the found object. Coming back to the notion that behaviors are symptoms of the disability, I changed my question. Holding the item in my hand and getting down to my child's level, I asked, "Where would I return this?" It was amazing. My child told me exactly where I could return each item. Whether it was sticky tack from the teacher's desk, a gold earring from an older sister, or a bright green magnetic tape measure swiped from daddy's work. And what I learned in those experiences is that when I come alongside my child to resolve an issue, rather than coming head on to confront an issue, we all got better results. Now, it didn't always stop the stealing, but it did change the stress level in our family. And now the found object was an opportunity to remind our kids not to take things that don't belong to them and to coach them what they can do when they see something interesting. Okay, I have to come back to checking socks because that's a funny story. My husband and I were starting to get a handle on the idea of preventing our children with FASD from taking things that don't belong to them. This was when our twins were about 9 or 10 years old, and now they're teenagers. We had increased our supervision at home and certainly out in the community, locked away items that were tempting or potentially harmful. I bought clothes for them that didn't have pockets, made sure their backpacks had as few pockets as possible, and checked them daily. One day when we had set up a visit with another family at McDonald's, the children were having fun playing in the playland and we were swapping stories with the other parents sitting at a table that had a clear line of sight to the kids and the restaurant. As we visited, to our amazement, we watched our darling little 10-year-old walk out of the playland and straight up to the condiment counter to grab a handful of sugar packets and slip them right into her socks. We were like, "What's happening right now? It was so crazy." Well, we excused ourselves from the table and we coached our daughter to understand that sugar packets were not there for her to take. And then we took note to check socks. You know, I bet you have stories to share like that too. Things your kids have taken, where they've stashed them. I'd love it if you would email me with your stories and maybe we could share them here on FASD Family Life. Because we're in it together, you guys. You know, I understand FASD is complicated. And I often say the struggle is real and so is success. It is so important that we all understand that fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is a disability with behavioral symptoms. Children and teens with FASD are not lazy, unmotivated, or bad. They are misunderstood. Individuals with FASD can learn. They do learn, but they need support, accommodations, and more time. As parents, we're misunderstood too. Friends and family tell us we're bad parents, we're too strict, too indulgent, that we cater to our children, and if we would just stop feeding our kids sugar, they would behave. Ah, if it was only so easy. Please hear me when I say you are not a bad parent. You are a parent who is trying to do the best you can with the skills and knowledge you have. We can all do better when we know better. One takeaway from this episode of FASD Family Life is when your child is exhibiting a challenging behavior, ask yourself, what if it's brain, not behavior? We must be careful not to punish behaviors that are actually symptoms of a disability. Instead, we need to look for creative ways to prevent some of the predictable behavioral symptoms by supporting the underlying brain disability. Do you have a behavioral symptom you'd like me to discuss on the show? Do you have a question about FASD? Email the show at fasdfamilylife@gmail.com to ask about a behavioral symptom that you're struggling with, and I'll do my best to address it. Next episode, we will address your questions, and we will also talk about developmental stage versus chronological age and what that looks like for your child. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe and leave a comment. Give a like to make it easier for others to find FASD Family Life, a podcast for families by families, raising children and youth with FASD. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and email your questions to fasdfamilylife@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, the struggle is real, but so is success. I'll speak with you soon.